our children safe, and our mother country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, kasi public safety is prevention. But when you speak about if you don't give ample prevention, then you speak about response. And after you respond, you speak about post-crisis.
Yes.
Yeah. So those three, I think, are very important. Yeah. Without public safety, or to put it simpler, without keeping safety for the public, there's no way that we can get anyone to set up any business. And I think that's primarily, like, really sad, because we have 3 million that are jobless. So what do I mean? It's like, if I were to set up a business anywhere, I'd like my employees and myself to feel safe. And I don't want any changes midstream on any policies that may affect my business when I am going on an international capability, and I must be accountable to my investors who are abroad or in any other country. So it's part of keeping the economy safe so that we don't lose the investors. And when we have people that have jobs, then we're not going to have criminality. It may lessen. But why do we have criminality? Because basically, everybody's looking for a job and doesn't have a job, so they're just wandering around, you know, doing nothing. And because we have criminality, how do you stop criminality? I think it's law enforcement. And that law enforcement means visibility. And we can't have visibility because we don't have enough police cars. We can't even prevent enough fires because we don't have the clothing that firemen need for their protection. And we don't even have the law in our side when there are women that are in jail for 10 years and have served their punishment 5 years ago. And I think these are concerns that women should take a good look at. And even as simple as closing the stove, and if you cook using firewood, then I think every woman should be aware that she can burn her own house and her neighbor's houses.
But there's no specific legislation you will want to file?
I would like to file a legislation on how safe our ships,
okay, the ships,
our airplanes are, and our trains that travel, how safe are they? And the legislation that I want in order to stop criminality and give encouragement to young and old people, you know, it's like if every barangay captain was given an increased budget of 1 million to implement the projects that they want to, then from that implementation of their projects, then they can hire those in the barangay. So it's a direct hiring in the lowest unit of our government, which is the barangay. So you're saying, I can't give 2 million or 3 million or 1 million jobs on my own. But if I can legislate that, the direction of the barangay, the jobless will have jobs. And I think for the safety of the women, like the rural health workers, they are given an honorario of 500 to 700 pesos a month, but they take care of everybody, including their own. So if they were made to be government employees, this would be really encouraging for the women to, you know, that they have something to hold on to when they retire for themselves after dedicating their lives to others.
In disaster preparedness, you think it needs to be strengthened
I think
certain
so.
Legislation?
I think
which
so.
Which specific? Is
because,
this earthquakes?
I think that many laws are not implemented. It's like, it's a precaution that the local government should do. When there is a typhoon signal and there are residents that are living by the river or the streams, automatically the National Disaster Council of every province should have everything ready for evacuation. But this is done like at least in a 6 months or 1 year preparation. It's like if And when I was governor, actually, knowing that the typhoon season was like June, July, August, September, we already, like, can we afford to buy a water raft? Can we use the schools as evacuation sites? Do we have enough rice that we can feed the evacuees? How will the children that go to school respond to no classes, because many are using their classrooms as homes?
Wow.
Yeah, it's really a pre-preparation for the weather that we encounter.
You know, even in schools, I know some children do not feel safe because of bullying.
Yeah.
How you also could check the school
I think
safety?
There's a law. Yeah, I think they...
Yeah, but I still get complaints, so I don't know how else I can help here.
How you can help?
Yeah, because it's not... when I refer them to DepEd, it's... I don't know, what else can we do?
Yeah, they say that it's the fraternities, right, that they blame.
Yeah, also fraternities. Even the young children, they're just bullied by their fellow classmates.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, sometimes I also think it's part of growing up and protecting yourself,
yes,
learning how to manage. Because the world isn't always kind. You know, so when you're a little boy my grandchild has gone through that, you know, people bullying him, you know, pushing him down the stairs with his school bags. So what we do is, what we've done is to complain to the school authorities that we don't need children like that in school.
Okay, yes,
yeah.
That's true.
No.
So aside
there was
from
even a Korean once
who
bullied my grandson in the bus and pulled
yeah.
his hair. You know, I think foreign nationalities should also be taught, their parents should be taught that if they want to be integrated into the Filipino system, that Filipinos aren't mean.
Mm.
We're really rather gentle. But what Mikey did was to complain to the school authorities. And they did act on it and expelled the boy.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very strict, actually. And
so,
I think it should be like that.
Yeah, I know. How about the corporal punishment? Are you for the passing of that law? I'm not sure if it's already passed in the Senate. I think it was passed in Congress. It's to avoid punishment with the discipline.
Yeah, everybody should be disciplined if they want to learn how to, you know, live in a country that shares, you know, an inch of his own home, you know, into his neighbor. Yeah, there should be a punishment for that. I really believe so. For children? Oh, I think that the punishment should only be for children that are about 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but not below 15. Because these kids, I mean, they can just be like naughty children. But if they engage in something that's like a heinous crime, then they should really be put in, not just in a reform home, but really in jail. Yeah.
You believe it's 15 years old?
I think so.
Yeah, I think there is a plan to lower the age.
Yeah, to lower it to 12.
Yes.
But then kids of 12 don't really know much, you know, about whether they did anything really wrong. It could have been a temper. It could have been that they see on TV, you know, a lot of guns on TV and how killers can get away with it.
Yeah, Sonny, would you like to follow up with cyber?
What will be your advocacy, ma'am? What will be your program in case you will be in a seat? Pagdating sa area na my advocacy is online safety and based on my exposure sa schools, parents do not pay attention to the online risks. I mean, they try to delegate this to the school. When I talk to their guidance office, and they are telling us na these are non-curriculum issues, so it's better left to the parents. And I'm talking about these top-tier schools, that unless the guidance office put the initiative program for the kids, then the online safety aspect, the online ethics aspect will not be taught. And at least in my opinion, it should start at around grade 1 where the GMRC is already integrated to the curriculum for the kids. Now, what would you be supporting programs, or do you have some bills on mind that could enhance the online intelligence of the parents and equip the school as well to cope with the online race, the grooming, the luring, the cyberbullying?
Yeah, actually, that we were taught by the U.S. Embassy in the PPSC on cybercrime, but then this is not for children. But I just say this as officers, you know, who are majors and lieutenant colonels and colonels. The cybercrime is actually used to detect crimes against the state, and these crimes against the state are really very dangerous because they include transnational crimes, right? So we've been taught by the U.S. Embassy that if there is an offense regarding the cybercrime, that these computers are actually must be safeguarded because they're national security risks if anybody gets hold of the computers, right? Mm-hmm. Because it can be dissected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's also that law that says that Department of Justice can actually have a hold order on all the computers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then have someone analyze it,
mm-hmm.
right? That's where the danger lies too.
Six.
Yeah, yeah. But on the little kids of about 1 year old, I think they should be taught. Maybe not 1 year old, honey. I think that's too young.
Beginning grade one, ma'am.
Grade one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not so sure whether I want to start them on a grade one level. Maybe a little bit like grade three, I think, maybe.
Because, yeah. Mom, even before they would learn how to read, they knew already how to operate an iPad.
Oh, they do.
To operate,
yeah, my grandchildren know how to do that. Yeah.
So at least more on the ethics aspect of using that, especially protection of the privacy of the family.
Yeah.
It's actually, more on, I hope, right now, based on my observation, none is paying serious attention unless there is a major issue.
Yeah.
There is no major
issue, there is no discussion. Yeah, yeah.
But on a day-to-day level, the school is not paying much attention to it. The parent association of that school are not also into it. And so the kids are left alone to understand and explore the digital environment without the proper guidance of either the teachers or the parents.
I think I say only 3 years old because I don't spoil my grandchildren. I don't let their parents buy them a computer at 1 year old. No, I have my grandson of 3 years old knows how to handle the computer, and my grandson of 10 knows how to handle it. But it certainly doesn't have any of those pornographic stuff in that that they're allowed to look at. You
but
know?
At least, mom, in one school, this is again an international school level. Grade 1 students, they are passing around the porn URL among friends, and they were able to get that through the computer of the father, one of the father of the kids.
Yeah.
So when the guidance office was able to discover it, so they called the parents, and the father just said, eventually they will learn that, so why should they prevent them from exploring?
No, I'm not for that. The parents should really guide their children on what they should watch and what they can play on the computer.
Yeah.
Actually, I always blame the parents when their children don't turn out, to learn what,
So would you be willing to support interventions, whether in a form of program or form of a bill, a law, that will compel, making sure that there will be collaboration between the
parents and the school,
the parents, and even the local government.
I think so.
To make sure that online safety, the safeguards are there.
Yeah, actually, that even brings me to another topic. It's like, yes, I agree that the parents should be castigated. I also agree that if I have like a drug addict child, that it's the pusher that should be punished. And if there's anybody that's a pimp, don't blame the prostitutes, but blame the pimp, and they should be punished.
Equally liable, yes.
Of course, because all of them are victims, actually. or somebody who's smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think that children below 3 years old should really actually own their own computer.
But at least that's your mindset, Mom, because I have a friend who is into selling Edo toys. Mm-hmm. According to him, once upon a time, a three-year-old girl would request for a doll as a present. But right now, they are requesting for an iPad or an iPhone.
Yeah, no more. There's no robots.
So things are changing. So I think the decision makers should also adapt to the changes to make sure the safeguards are there.
Yeah, but actually, I even think that the manufacturers should also, you know, the limit. Like, if there was such a law that said these are the only programs that children of 1 to 7 can watch. And
actually, if you could propose, ma'am, that to have a sort of parang MTRCB. Counterpart
for the digital games, for the different
parang this body will be the certifying body.
Okay,
this kind of game is good for this
1 to 7 or 7 to 14. Yes,
we don't have this. Definitely. We don't have it here yet.
That I'll really support. I'm glad you brought that up.
In connection with that, Abuf Netizens filed a bill. Through Senator Miriam Santiago, it's the Magna Carta for the Philippine Internet Freedom. And we're hoping that you could also help support that because you said something earlier on the national security risks about cybercrime. So this is one of the issues that netizens really want to push in the Senate. If you could look into it, it protects the civil and political rights of Filipinos. Basically, the freedom of the use of the internet. Have you read the latest cybercrime law?
I read the cybercrime law, but I don't know what's the latest. I read it last year. Is there another one?
I mean, there was a TRO. Did you read that?
A 3 year old, and then
it was. We're expecting that there will be something that will be out in the next.
But not in the law.
No, it's
maybe
still
just as an incident.
But then we believe that it's not really the law. It doesn't really address the crimes in the internet.
You want it to be stronger.
And also protect our rights. That's why we have this Magna Carta for Philippine
The rights versus the punishments.
True. It's not proportionate and it is impinging already on our rights. That's why we would like you to look at it, Magna Carta for Filipino. And this one is better, I think, because these are netizens crowdsourcing it.
Yeah.
And it will be, of course, refiled in the next Congress.
Okay.
So
it's really the responsibility, you know, that's attached to,
yes, the responsibility.
To all of these new experiences,
and the rights. So even if you say you're not an active internet user, I'm sure your children are.
Yes.
Roshi, want to add?
I have another question. I'm not surprised that your main platform is about public safety, but my question is, when you were still young, I wondered why you took up National Security Administration's course.
It is a 1 year course, and I took it up because I had the professor in UST who wanted me to learn about national security because I had done my master's degree with a minor in theology in Mindanao.
Okay.
Because the UST priest wanted me to really give a contribution to history.
Okay.
And the contribution I did came from this one paragraph from Salibi, the Lebanese author on the history of Sulu. And it said that the Muslims were the bravest people that he had known about.
Okay.
Because when they were attacked in 1848 by the Spaniards in the island of Tongkil, in the smaller island of Balangini, they had four forts because they were into slave trading and slave raiding. They caught the Christians on the seashores.
Okay.
Yeah. So as revenge, the Spaniards had to stop this because they couldn't control the the thievery of human beings, and who were sold to the Spaniards, the French, and the Chinese, and the English, because they needed people to man their ships, okay. and to dive, looking for tripang and seaweeds and manpower. So the Spaniards attacked this island, and all of them, you know, they attacked the forts, and they used the longest ladders that had ever been used in the history of the Philippines in any attacks. And the women and children dove to their deaths. Those that were not killed by the Spaniards just jumped over the hundreds of high fort, you know, made of limestone. And so it really intrigued me. So that's why I said, I'm going to take off from my Philippine history and look for this tribe, which I did. So looking at that story about the tribe really was a part of national security that should have been practiced in the 1848s, you know? Yeah. Yeah. So national security, yes, because there were salisipans, the boats, fast, swift boats used by this Samal. And there was the weather that went Amihan and Habagat. So I had covered the environment, I had covered the transportation and how they did that. Their modus was a surprise attack with throwing nets over the Christians in the seashores of like Bohol, Masbate, Bicol, and then gathering them and then putting them in their ships, and zoom, off they went. So obviously there was no protection for them. Yeah. Or news did not go as fast as internet today. Yeah. So I said, oh, this is national security. So when I was offered a slot in the National Defense Council of the Philippines, I said yes. Yeah. It kind of tied up with the Muslim culture that I really wanted to be my expertise. And for 30 years, I've been studying Muslim culture. Yeah.
Why?
Because it's really a contribution to the Philippines. When you know about the Moro, our Mora brothers, it's extremely challenging to know that actually Hadramaut had begun in Yemen, how they came here into Indonesia, into Malaysia, to the Philippines. It's really a very challenging history. Yeah. And how they were able to conquer Spain and then end up here in the Philippines, the royalty, like Kabungsan in 1414 in Maguindanao, and then Abu Bakar in 1298 in Sulu. It's really absolutely interesting. And if it wasn't that I was campaigning, I was on to Islamic studies at UP. Yeah. And the influence of Islam in Southeast Asia. Yeah.
But you're a Catholic.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is that the reason, ma'am, why your name is being dragged on the Samba issue? Because of your heart for the Moro cause?
Yes. But actually, I didn't know about the invasion, but I can't say that I don't know the Kirams as well as I know the Tans and the Loongs and Amiens and Tulawi and Arbisons, and I know them all. So, yeah, I did. But I'm trying to internalize this and thinking, if they were onto an invasion, why would they only be 243? Taosu, who went there, and why did they only have like 27 armalites and 23 handguns if they were willing to invade North Borneo and Sabah, which in their thinking is theirs? So it's like if I decide to go in the high seas, any fishing boat will have ammunition, because it's dangerous in the high seas. There's piracy, you know, until today. And so were they really mistaken? You know, it's not an invading force, but as a body of Taosu people who wanted to live there together with their relatives.
What is your reading? Because you know them so well. Or they just were there for claim their lands?
I thought, you know, these Taosu, they're very intelligent. You know, and they go force against force, and they'll commit suicide if they have to. You know, they'll you know, but most certainly, like any invading force, you know, against the Royal North Borneo Army, 243 suicide.
Oh,
and And when you consider that the Royal Army of Sabah has like firepower and sea power, land power, the infantry, you know, there's no way that they would live. 243 of them would get killed the minute that they step there. If they're wanting to go there was meant to be an invasion, I doubt it. You know, like Turtle Island, Cagayan de Sulu, Sitangkay, they all go to buy canned foods in Sabah. That's where they get their vegetables, their spam, their sardines, their rice. They get it from there. It's like shopping. And for them, the gateway to the Philippines is really Tawi-Tawi. That's their frame of mind. The radio is even a Bahasa. Their money is Ringgit. For us, because we're Christians, we think it's Great Grand Manila. For them, it's Great Grand Tawi-Tawi.
So what's the solution for this?
I think the solution was never to threaten. Because the more you threaten, the more that they will be not angry, but riled up, you know, to want to prove that Sabah is theirs. Yeah, and the solution is always peace.
Yes. Yeah.
You can't learn, you know, 30 years of studies in one day. You know, that's why when the administration was threatening, you don't threaten anybody. No way. And besides, how can you threaten anybody who believes that this land is his? You know, so when you speak about it, it's like they needed compassion and understanding, because many are jobless there, many have relatives there, some may have papers, some may not have papers to remain there, but they find that they'd rather stay in the in Sabah with work than in the Philippines with no work. So you have the Iranos there, you have the Yakan, you have the Tausug, who go by boat, and they live there with the relatives, they even visit them. And then they go back after a week, back to Tawi-Tawi, and they're so happy because they saw their relatives. We can't support them economically. So why not go and stay there and trade there? Even if it's under the administration of the Malaysians, then they can get their papers ready, and some had papers that were ready. And they didn't have to be sent back to the Philippines if they had papers. So I think the solution is that the government should stress now, if they really want peace in Mindanao, then they should stress their sovereignty. That they should face it. You know, why should they be afraid of it? That Malaysia, the part of North Borneo and Sabah, was a present to the Sultan Bakhtiar of Sulu in 1685. So it's good. You know, let's start to get peace for every group, diba? Yeah, if you really want peace in Mindanao. But then the MILF can continue, and the government on the peace process, because Sabah is not part of the equation, you know, or part of ARM. So it should just continue.
Pero ma'am, do you think the MILF peace deal or ongoing negotiation would address the Mindanao, at least the peace and order problem in Mindanao, considering the MNLF is not happy with what is going on?
No, because the MNLF believe that they're claiming the same ancestral domain. Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. Because they're both claiming the same areas. But the Islamic, the Organization of Islamic Conference was present in the signing of the MILF, and the only true representative of that Islamic organization is Misuari. So the fact that they recognize Misuari as the only representative, and yet they were in the MILF, sends me different signals. Mm-hmm. That maybe they no longer support Misuari, maybe. I don't know, but so why would they be in the signing of the peace agreement? But I think it's going to take long, Sunny, because the Organic Act is going to be completely debunked, which was never even implemented. So now they're going to come out with new laws regarding on how the MILF should govern, ARMN. that's going to take 2 years, and everybody's going to be so restless in wanting to, you know, to want in wanting to develop the ministerial form of government.
So, assuming that this agreement will be reached, so it will supersede the agreement with the MNLF.
It looks like that, yes. So, if everybody was taken in the very beginning of the negotiations, then at least you could settle the MN, the MI.
But do you think everybody Kirams was brought in?
No.
Okay.
No.
So the problem is far from over.
Yes. Although I'm very close to the MI. In 1985, when we were campaigning for Cory, actually, and we were organizing, because we were under still Marcos, no? Mm-hmm. We went to see the MI in Camp Abubakar, and they said to us, we were never for secession. We just wanted to be recognized. He says, because we go by the Islamic religion. And also, we want to have an arrangement with the government on how we can have our land back. It's still the same. They haven't changed their stand. It's still their ancestral domain. Yeah. And also, if you go to get Naomi, seven municipalities from North Cotabato, and include them, and you're going to get six from Lano Norte, you've got to have a plebiscite, because you just can't say, I want the following municipalities under. No? So I'm really close to the MI. In fact, I'm Minang of their child. Yeah.
But do you think, ma'am, it is one step closer? The MINFP deal is one step to address a problem, or it will only rock the boat further?
No, I think it's all right. Yes, I think it's one step forward. Yeah. Because these leaders of today are tempered. If you wait for the leaders that are going to come up when we are all dead, these other leaders are more restless and they're more revolutionary. Yeah.
It's better to talk with the
seasoned fighters. Yeah.
Ms. Kuhan po, I'm interested because I'm reading books regarding the Ezra People Power Revolution, and I've read the Senate President's memoirs saying that you were one of the people who supposedly looted Imelda's jewelries as soon as they fled after the People Power. Is that true, ma'am?
How about I tell you it's true? I stole. When I got to Malacañang on the fourth day, the safe was open, and I saw all tribal jewelry inside. And then I spoke to a lady who was very close to Mrs. Marcos, and she told me that Mrs. Marcos had put the jewelry in diapers, and she had given it to Madame Kauki, some of the jewelry, upon landing in Honolulu. I met Mrs. Marcos 2 years ago, and I spoke to her, and I said, Mrs. Marcos, I don't have any for jewelry, I said to her. And she said, I never said that you had it. And I said, well, I was told that you did, but I want to clarify that I don't have it. And that whatever inventory I saw, I gave to Cory Aquino. And all that, all the papers, because I'm a historian, I got all the papers that I could get, that I'll admit. And I brought them to the residence of Dr. Angelita Reyes, who was also with me in Malacañang. I brought with me, just to be safe, the researcher of the National Archives. I brought with me the chief librarian of the National Archives. I brought with me the photographer of the National Library. And I bought another one who documented what I documented. And we put everything in two cars. I think we were two cars. And none of them hit my house, nor my in-law's house, in 11 Palm Avenue. We brought them directly to Angelita Reyes' residence, who was with us, and we carried them up, not me, I couldn't carry those luggages up, into her attic. In the morning, when we had this meeting that we were supposed to check out what the papers were, I saw in her house in Das Marias Village, President Ramos, Senate President Ponce Enrile, I saw Onasan, and I saw Jimmy Ongpin there. And Jimmy Ongpin called Peping and said, we have the papers that your wife took from Malacañang, and we're going to bring them to the central bank. And they were papers that I know were agreements between political leaders and Mr. Marcos regarding logging was one of those papers that I saw. Yeah. And they were taken to the central bank. Yeah. Together with any inventory that I had gotten. And that's the truth. I didn't know that there was a hearing in New York where Angelita Reyes was invited. Angelita Reyes got into the picture because she asked Cory, when Cory assigned me to go to Malacañang in Cahuangco building, to go to see if everything was clear. That day I also saw George Ibinay there. Yes, and I saw many military men who were there, Philippine Army. Yeah. And we sat on the floor and we just gathered all the papers that we could get and brought them to the central bank. But none of the jewelry. There were some in a little red bag, and I brought them to the house of Angelita Reyes, and I never saw them again.
You never saw them again?
No.
You never saw them again after you had seen Indine no. on the house of
I never saw them again.
It's
yeah,
in the book.
I challenged
yeah,
her.
In the book.
Yeah, I didn't buy the book, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But I challenged him because, well, it's not proper for me to do that. I respect him as the Senate President. But he knows what papers there were.
Still catching up.
Okay, you wrote somewhere that a good metaphor about your ting-ting.
Yeah,
that you will make valis to the dirt of the unmatawid.
Yeah. Actually, that idea, that is an intro to the ballistic thing in the rallies. And it didn't come from me.
How did it come?
No, it didn't come. But I say, you know, that the Daan Matuwid should also be malinis and tahimik. I added to that.
Malinis and tahimik.
Yeah.
But I saw you sweeping. Sweeping ba yun or you were giving
yes.
one thing?
You see, kasi like this, no? When Mikey was a little girl, I trained my children to go to the rallies with me. I wanted them to know what it was to fight for democracy. And Mikey was about 7 or 9 years old. And I had Gina and Maymay, and I told them, here's the Walisting thing. You've got to clean all the confetti that was thrown out the window into Ayala Avenue. And so they cleaned. It was like a part of a little exercise, and they were little kids. But I said, I love you, but I must instill discipline on you, and you must learn to love your country. And these are rallies. I said, you can come with me, but let's clean up after. And that's and we got the clean the ballistic thing. When I was the governor of Tarlac, there was so much lahar because of the eruption of Mount Pinatubo. It was a terrible time to be governor, but it was the most challenging time, especially for a woman, to learn how to put the families together and assure them on a psychosocial aspect that there was someone who was going to help them materially and economically, and also in their frame of mind that they should forget, you know, with the doctors and psychiatrists and psychologists that it is gone. Their houses were gone, but that there was going to be new hope in new homes, in new subdivisions, in lands, in Capas, Concepcion, and Bamban, provinces of municipalities of Tarlac. And so we used the Walisting team. And then I had remembered to use that because in my campaign, I bought all the Walisting thing in Tarlac, everything. I bought all the Walisting thing in Pangasinan. And we used that so that whenever I went to campaign, little children were given each a Walisting thing to clean their schools. But as I passed by, they would wave the Walisting thing with the yellow ribbons. Yes. So that was my campaign. Yeah, clean up, clean up. Yeah.
And it, until now, it's an idea.
Yes, I use it until now. In fact, the other candidates always say to me that I'm the only one who really helps the economy of the provinces, because when I get to a province, I buy all the Walisteng thing that I can see, 200 pieces, 300 pieces, and then when they introduce my name, I give the Walisteng thing away. I don't give out t-shirts that I throw. I hand the Walisteng thing to them, and that's it, yeah, so that they remember me.
I like the metaphor.
Yes, yeah.
Especially when I want to. Okay, you want to have something to say? 3 minutes.
Ah.
Akala ko you're going to ask something. Ah, okay.
I'm going
and,
back on.
But you know, I'll tell you something funny. It's like, the Walisteng thing in Jolo is only 8 pesos. And there's only one more person that makes that Walisteng thing and no more. So I ordered 200 from him in Jolo. The Walisteng thing in Baguio costs 30 pesos. It's so expensive. So I paid 28. The Walisteng thing in Iloilo costs 35 pesos each. Yeah. It's so expensive. The Walisteng thing in I think it was in Laguna cost 18. So ask me how much is the Walisteng thing and I'll tell you how much it is all over the Philippines.
You can have a map already.
Yeah.
A map
so
of the thing.
That's why they always laugh and they say she's the only one helping the local economy. Oh. And I'm the only senatorial candidate who can say that I was shot at in España Rotonda, tear gas, yes, tear gas forever, you know, and offered my life for democracy and freedom. And even if they think I'm old when I say that, it's the truth.
No, no one's ever told.
In España Rotonda,
what happened there?
That was in España Rotonda, that was in 1980, before the ESA Revolution.
Ah, okay, yeah.
The army and the police shot at us. And the son of President Nemenso of UP, who was running with me, fell on the pavement. And while the soldiers were running and shooting at us, and we took them with his UP classmates and brought them into an apartment. But the saddest part was that every time we ran and tried to put him into any apartment, or even when we were running, because we must have been about 2,000 or 1,500, who were all street parliamentarians, the Filipinos closed their windows and didn't let us in. And that I really felt so sad that suddenly it was a division of the Filipino people. So we got, there was I remember Maricor of UP, and she took on her bandages together with a friend of Nemenso. And then we took him when everything died down to the hospital. And of course, here, in Makati, yeah, they water hosed us, and all the water came from the canal. So it was dirty, yeah. But that's okay, you know. I mean, it was a commitment. Yeah. It was more than that. I wanted my country to be free. In fact, you know, I have to tell you this, which very few people really know. The day, I think it was before elections, I was in charge of ARMM. I went to Tawi-Tawi, Sulu, Zamboanga, and Basilan, and I had my passport with me. The plan was that with this passport, I would end up in Tawi-Tawi and find the boat to Sabah. Corey with Peping was going to go from Cebu on a low-flying flight over Pangasinan and Palawan and end up in Sabah. Len and Tess Oreta were already waiting for us in Malaysia. All of us were supposed to meet. The ambassador of the Malaysian embassy here had a seat for 5 of my children because every nationality sent their country's airplane to take their consular employees out of the Philippines. But the ambassador of Malaysia was so kind to me. And we had 5 seats, but he said to me, "Ting ting, no yaya, just your 5 little children." And they had 5 on that Malaysian Airlines. And because Corey won, none of us ended up in Malaysia, but we were all ready to go to Malaysia and meet up there. Why? Because today, the Agong of Malaysia, who is the Sultan, was the house guest of Ninoy, because Ninoy was teaching at Boston University. And the Sultan, and he was then the Prince of Johor, would be with Ninoy and stay with him at their Boston residence. And so, knowing him, we established contact with him if Malaysia would take us in and keep us there as a safe haven, if our revolution was not to pursue to success.
What do you say, Sam?
I have a question. We have a question from Carlos Sultan.
Oh, Carlos. Hi, Carlos. How are you? Yeah. You're so funny.
I know. Carlos asked if what about your opinion about the 60-40
ownership?
Ownership in the Constitution. Would you support charter change and change that particular provision?
I support charter change. I think mainly, Carlos, well, let me tell you this. I think the term of a local official is too short at 3 years. 1 year you're learning how to run it, and the other year you're running it, and the next year you're running for election. I think that should not be. 4 years is a good number to serve the country in a local government capacity. On the 60-40, I also sometimes wonder, because you know, if foreign nationalities were allowed to own more, a bit more than 60%, perhaps they would buy into more corporations in the Philippines. But that's something that the Constitution should be really changed, and it should be dissected on how many really want to own more property in order for the Philippines to develop now, especially with so many jobless Filipinos. I'm really thinking about that maybe they should, the foreign nationalities should earn a little bit, should have a bit more than 60%. A bit more, but they should be regulated according to what type of business will this be? I mean, sorry, 60% for the Filipinos and 30% for the foreigners, that maybe the 30% should be a little bit higher in order to encourage more foreign investment. Because the PPP has not even taken off. The PPP was 26 projects, you know, and it was meant to be like 2010, you know, 2012, 2013, and there's not even one that you can say is on a completion of the private-public partnership. I don't know why, you know, the government's going a little bit slow, and maybe the foreigners are saying if we own a little bit more of the corporations that we set up in the Philippines, maybe we'd be more enthusiastic in setting up more business.
But will that not protect the landless? Will the landless Filipinos not be protected with this kind of law if there's an increase in the foreign ownership?
Landless?
Yeah, there are some Filipinos who are landless.
Well, you know, we're not meant to be lazy. We're not indolent, as some of the results writing is. If you want to succeed, you've got to work. You know, it's not an excuse, you know, to say that nothing can be done because you're landless. Many people are not landless, but many people are successful, you know? It depends on how much heart you put into what you really want, not just investment, but how much you want to succeed. It's like my father's not a good example because he owned land. But but there are many that don't own land but are successful.
That was the answer. That was the stand of another candidate. Yeah, that didn't really like the increase because of the landless Filipinos.
No. I think it really is the capability of how much you really want to succeed, and in so doing, get rich and your country richer. You know, that question brings me up to the land reform. You know, Pepin was part of the land reform. Pepin was part of the land reform law that President Magapagal in 1967, I think it was. Yeah, there was a law passed, and Pepin asked the old President Magapagal, why do you want me you know, I'm such a big landowner. If there was another landowner with him, you know, there were two landowners. And I said, precisely, that's why I'm asking you to join. And Peping said, has land reform really alleviated the plight of the people? No, not at all. Because they just gave the land. That's not land. That's giving the land, but it's not comprehensive agrarian reform. You just don't leave the Filipino up to do what he wants with the land. You've got to help him develop his own capability to earn a living from the land, and adequately give him seeds and fertilizer and water and marketing. We've got to teach them where to plant, when and how, if we want the intercropping. And we have to really help them in the marketing. You know, in Tarlac, when I was the governor, I said, okay, policy. 18 municipalities, one product, one municipality. Because they were selling so much watermelon in the highway, and some of the watermelon was 30 pesos, some was 25, 15, they were killing each other. No. So I said, but if Paniki grows peanuts, and then watermelon in Capas, Sincamas in Paniki, you know, then all of that, then you put it in the streets. So I did better than that. I gave them a baksakan, because this is the time of the lahar. They had nowhere to put their products. Their luck was flooded with dust, mud, water, felled trees. So I said, let's build 18 of them. And the president gave me 18 productivity centers. Wow, three times the size of my house. Huge. And that's where they put until today. They hold their meetings there. They hold their crowning the queen. They put all the rice there, the palay, anything they want, it still is there. Yeah. And that baksakan where anybody can go and buy. Yeah. At least that's my legacy.
I'm curious, after you finish your term as governor, how come it took you a long time to run public office?
Well, I went to school.
You went to school. Yeah. Is this the defense?
No. I went to school, I finished my PhD in Philippine History and Criminology. And it was at that point in time when I was through studying that I received a call from President Gloria Arroyo, and she said to me, would you like to be my asset? She said, I have to build 1,680 school buildings, but only in remote and hazardous barangays. And I said, gee, that's my type. Yeah. Remote and hazardous. I did. We did it with the Philippine Army and the Chinese Chamber. Yeah. We did. We finished with the DPWH, with the DILG, with the Muslims, with the Igorots, with the Incaraga. We did
1,680.
It was even much cheaper than giving it completely to the DPWH to do. The Army Engineering Brigade. It was made in conjunction with the streets, with the roads.
Yeah.
You know, like in Bulto and Barira, Maguindanao, there were no roads, but there we were, you know. And we even had to ride a horse going down just to be able to construct the schools. You remember, the order was remote and hazardous barangays. Even with the NPAs, we did. We just crossed and we weren't afraid. Especially in summer. Yeah, we took a boat to build those school buildings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when that was done, I think I spent about 2.5 years doing that, or 2 years. Then I got a phone call from the secretary of DILG, that was Joelina, and he said, Gloria wants to make you the undersecretary for moral concerns. And I said, yeah, sure. Yeah. So I did that. And then later I got a call from her and said, I want you to be the president of the Philippine Public Safety College. And I said, what's that? I didn't know it was a school for police, fire, and jail personnel. Yeah. And it was so badly run. And I had to make it a respectable school. So I called Krame, and I said, I'm now the president of the school, and I'm closing it down. So I called civil service, Karina David, and I said, Karina, I'm closing it down. And she laughed and laughed, and she was really laughing. And she said, okay. I said, I'm going to ask for a moratorium to this school because it needs like a total program of instructions that is completely new. You know, the students must be given high morale. The teachers must be removed or suspended. for those that sell grades and exam questions. And so it is what it is today. It's gone up a lot, high, sky high.
So yeah. What made you want to run again for the Senate as a candidate?
Well, when I was asked to run, it was
by
Jojo. Jojo Bina and Pepin got together. They decided that if they had a Gumbanco in the slate, it would be good to show that we were not fighting Noy Noy. That I was there because, well, all of us are there because we believe that we can have a Senate that can be different faces, different people, you know. And that's 9 candidates. We all have a program of government that we work out together, yeah. And with my qualifications from my work in local government, that's 11 years, the ILG plus 6 as governor, and my studies, you know, I'm the only one that has 2 PhDs and two master's degrees, and my studies in public safety, that's taken me 8 years to study in public safety.
Now that you're in public safety, that is your main platform. So what do you think about total gun ban?
What?
Total gun ban. Should we have a total gun ban?
No. I'm going to be very frank about this. We mustn't have a total gun ban because the criminals are not going to give in their guns. And so the criminals will be the ones to have a gun. Guns, and how about those law-abiding citizens who don't have protection from criminals? What I would advocate would be a newer exam for anyone who holds the guns. Yeah. I advocate that any gun that's sold or not sold should be reported to the police because they're the ones that are in authority to issue the guns. And anybody who sells and buys should automatically, you know, go to the PNP and report it as being theirs. Or it would be illegal possession of firearms. There should even be a school, and there are actually, you know, gun clubs that teach anybody who owns a gun how to handle it properly.
How frequent do you go to Tarlac?
I go to Tarlac, I stay in Luisita. Yeah. I go there mainly because people die. Deaths and baptisms and weddings, mm-hmm. And I go there when anybody needs me. Yeah.
So,
but we usually have our meetings in Hacienda Luisita.
Yes, I'm based in Pampangat, but I'm actually going everywhere. I'm
That's
really
good.
More into agriculture.
Oh, good.
Because I'm a veterinarian.
We used to have a lot of vets coming to us at Pepin and Mike had their horses in Luisita.
Equine practitioners.
Oh, yeah.
I'm more involved with the swine industry.
Oh, my daughter has an organic farm for pigs.
Yes.
Organic.
My gosh, she's so, you know, we can't even go there in a car. We have to wash our shoes, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so strict. But she has little pigs that are like this small. You know, when I was governor, I used to have fresh milk every day. She had 150 cows. And then she imported the cows from Australia, and they were sick. Oh. And the DA sold it to her.
Ooh.
And they came and brought in a disease. And all her 150 cows were wiped out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yes, I think there was one instance that there was a disease coming from Australia.
That was terrible. But we had a cow living with us because we had a cow with a baby, and we had to help her give birth. So dinigay namin sa labadahan, you know. So she had her baby there, and she was too weak to feed her baby. So we had to give chup chup, yeah. So we fed that cow. That cow stayed with us until the cow got this big, you know. And we really loved that cow. That, you know, I really believe that you can domesticate any animal, as long as you treat that animal well and feeding well. You know, that cow, the cow's name was Cow Hanko. We named him.
Really?
Yeah. I forgot.
Nickname, cow.
Yeah, we had the first name for that cow.
Ah, okay.
And we'd say, come here, come here. And he'd come to us. And then, you know, amazing, you know, brilliant cow. And then, he used to climb the stairs and then go to my sala, go up the bedroom.
How big a cow?
Big. Yeah, because it began like a little cow, like this small. Mm-hmm. That, and then he got bigger and bigger. He jumped into the pool.
Gosh.
You know, you can domesticate a cow, amazing. Yeah.
Never seen a pet.
Yeah. But you know, what happened was that he started getting taller, so he would eat my blouses. I had one blouse.
Oh no.
Yeah, I had like 10 or 8 blouses of one kind. Those are my uniform as governor and khaki pants. He started eating my blouses, and I said, hey, no, we can't keep this cow. Because he was getting already a little bit too big.
Yes,
and then he would go to
pizza.
The jeeps that we had, because we used to go by jeeps.
Yes,
you know,
those
U.S. jeeps that you buy in Capas, no?
Yeah.
He'd eat the leather upholstery, he'd everything. You know, and he could put his mouth, you know, and shoes. So he said, it's a bit hard to have Gawanko here. Yeah.
Gawanko.
So we put him in a big, big pen with his mother.
I know you mentioned that you joined Una. Una because I guess Una wanted to show that they're not trying to fight with Pinoy. But I guess it's as a Kahuangko, it's really weird that you're not part of Pinoy state, considering that you also worked as a presidential assistant to Cory Aquino 2001.
No, I never worked for Cory. But I caused the first peace agreement with the MILF during Cory's time. That was 1987. Because I knew the MILF. So we met in a Simoy crossing in Maguindanao, and we signed the first peace agreement. I brought the Ping with me, myself, and the MI brought their Ustaches there. And it was then the Pimentales DILG who signed it in 1987, the first peace agreement.
Yeah, okay.
But me as a Kahuangko, I never worked for Cory. I only worked for Cory as back channeling for the MILF. Yeah.
Okay.
I've never worked under Noy Noy, but I have enough expertise to be able to work for him, but no one will tap me in Malacañang because that's exclusively their clique. Okay? Yeah. So the question was, why am I Una? Okay. In 1978, Ninoy was running against Mrs. Imelda Marcos in Manila. He formed a team of 18, I think it was, not 24, 18 candidates from his side and 18 from Mrs. Marcos' side. Senator Salonga, Senator Jerry Rojas boycotted that election and they did not want to support Ninoy. And Ninoy was then a member of the Liberal Party. So Ninoy asked the permission of Johnny Ponce-Enrile to ask Peping to visit him because he needed a political party to carry him, and Laban was established. Laban's organizers were Anding Roses, Monchik Mitra, Jojo Binay. We had Diokno's advisor, Tanyada. They were all part of that. Oh, Neptali Gonzalez. Yeah. And we formed Laban in order to be able to fight that election of 1978. So, eventually, PDP joined up with Laban, and in 1992, 95, 98, I ran as PDP Laban in Tarlac. Yeah. And I like PDP Laban. It's a bottoms-up party. The bottom is the barangay, and whatever they decide goes up to the National Council. The National Council doesn't make any decisions without consultation, and the smallest political unit, the barangay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a question from online. What is your stand on the mining law?
Responsible mining.
You're for responsible mining.
Yes.
What's that? Because for me personally, I don't believe in mining in fragile ecosystems like, you know, those islands, where it will affect the sea and the...
No, that's why you have the DNR to monitor that. And if the DNR is monitoring it properly, you're not going to dig on the Dinagat Island, you know, until it's going to fall into the sea. That's their responsibility. That's why there are departments that should oversee mining. Yeah. But I really believe that you know, there are a lot of foreigners that want to come in here for mining. And I really encourage you, because God gave us the mines, you know, ore, coal, gold, you know, in order to be able to reap from His blessings. I really believe that in my heart, you know. It's there. It's going to help our economy make money. So that, you know, they're not pipichugin. These people that come here put in billions, you know. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you go midstream and then into a policy and change the policy, then these miners are accountable to their investors. You know, we don't change the policies midstream. And there's no harmonization of the mining law between the local government and the department of DENR regarding the mines. You know, there should be harmonization, because I know that the governor can give permits, but then now the Lima is saying no, they shouldn't, and these, you know, other factors. That's why people are turned off from wanting to come and be investors. But, you know, when we have a big mining firm coming here and they know exactly what should be done according to the terrain, and they're responsible that they don't dynamite, and you know, there's every precaution imaginable, you know, and they certainly wouldn't destroy the billions that they put into the Philippine mining industry, you know, to be irresponsible and have their contracts canceled.
Because it will take hundreds of years to build it back. You can't, once you excavate everything there. So
no, but precisely, that's part of mining.
Yeah, but we'll have no more islands left.
That's responsible mining. You're not going to saturate equipment with backhoes just to dig and then reach the sea. No, no, man. You cannot do that. Because you'll have measurements on how deep into the sea you can go. You know, or how wide is the land that you can occupy. That's all the permits of the DNR. That's just their responsibility.
Yeah, it's a bit tricky because we're composed of islands.
No, but that it doesn't mean to say that the island is only like 100 meters down, and when you start digging into the sea, you hit the sea level. No. No. I think the DNR would really know what to do in terms of permit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Public-private partnerships that have to do with mining. Yeah.
Log ban. Are you for log ban?
The log ban?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm for it. Until loggers, you know, cut trees irresponsibly and don't plant new trees, there has to be a log ban. Yeah.
How is it in Mindanao?
Well,
in your visits,
it's not only Mindanao, it's other areas of the Philippines that's barren, you know, mm-hmm. because so many take advantage. Even Quezon is barren. Yeah. It's not only Mindanao, you know.
Well, yeah. All the latest reports you saw are coming from there. Big truckloads.
No, I've seen them right here in Cavite. Big truckloads. Yeah, mm-hmm. Coming from Quezon. Yeah. Again, the DNR should be monitoring this. It's their responsibility.
Are they coming online?
Ma'am, do you have any proposed programs or bills to support small entrepreneurs? How to encourage entrepreneurship?
Truthfully, I don't lie. No, not yet. No. Although, there's a little school that I wanted to, a trade school. Mm-hmm. And we discussed it last week about having a little trade school as part of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And to teach only how to cook, to teach waitering, mm-hmm. and to teach carpentry to those inclined to want to do carving, mm-hmm. and to teach music if they want, you know. Yeah, that's my little niche of entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And then to go from province to province, mm-hmm. teaching.
Yeah. Pero would you be supporting programs that would allow access to funds for small entrepreneurs or startup entrepreneurs? Because normally, ito yung common problem, and that's why they end up with the 5-6.
Yeah. But where can they borrow? Even the farmers now can't even borrow from any bank. The banks want money. They don't want land.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there must be some institution that's willing to lend them money to begin small-scale entrepreneurship.
Ma'am, since you're
let's look into that. Yeah.
What reforms can you introduce naman, ma'am, sa military? Especially we have the current issues ng kay Burgos, di ba, yung mga forced disappearances. So do you have something on mind?
Yeah, I have something rather strong in my mind. Why is it that the NPA is never charged with human rights offenses and the NPA can charge the army with human rights offenses? Why is that so? How come, you know, this is completely demoralizing for the army. If for me, so even a lieutenant, as a full colonel, you know, it's demoralizing that if I try to keep the peace, you know, and then anyone can file a case against me for human rights abuse. It's the same with the police. How can you do your duties when immediately you're charged with offenses and then you're relieved of your position without even proven guilty or not? No, I'm very strong about that. It really angers me. You know, why it's so lopsided? And you know, schooling and training. You know, these gentlemen, you know, and ladies that belong to the armed forces of the Philippines or the jail fire and the police organizations. They're not stupid. You know, they're very intelligent. They're lawyers. They're engineers. They're criminologists. They're nurses. They're doctors. You know, just because their uniform personnel doesn't make them less intelligent than you and I. No, not at all. So they know that when they embark on any operations, it's a risk that they take to fulfill a duty. And yet, they're charged with human rights offenses. Look, you know, already the psyche of the public is, X person was salvaged, and this person was buried here, and this person was killed. It isn't even proven. And already the judgment is there. It's really quite unfair. And if they're not there, who's going to keep peace and order?
I'm going to name some of the issues that we have in the country. Can you make, I guess, a quick 1 to 2 sentences about it? Okay, our each bill.
I'm a mother of 5 children, and I've never had an abortion, so I don't believe in the RH bill.
Okay, divorce?
Divorce, no. Because if we had divorce, it would mean to say that it would be so easy to get into marriage. Why is it that we need divorce? Just because America has divorce or other European countries? No. I think we should keep by Philippine value, no divorce for me. Then anybody can get married and say, I'll get married and I can file for divorce when I'm tired of my marriage. No, marriage is a commitment before God. Yeah.
Okay. Cybercrime.
The cybercrime law, yes, there are, I believe that cybercrime should be punished, extremely punished.
Okay. FOI, freedom of information.
Yes, anything, everything should be known by the public. Transparency, accountability. And except on national security issues.
Same-sex marriage?
No. Marriage is made for procreation. I don't believe that there should be same-sex marriage. But as we all know, it is a personal commitment of anybody that's either a woman and a man who want to live together. And it's done anyway. So why do you need a marriage?
Okay. Death penalty.
Yes. The death penalty should come back, should be returned, to really make people afraid that there is, you know, that there is justice and you can't take anybody's life, you know, because if you don't have the death penalty, it should serve as an example, you know, for others to be afraid that it is a sin to take another person's life.
Thank you.
Something light naman. For women like
okay.
For women like
us.
Over 50, like me. How do you, for you, what is beauty? I mean, taking care of yourself like that. Because
I hate the answer that says beauty is within, beauty is an attitude.
No, I mean, about taking care of yourself.
That's why I'm not going to answer that.
Yeah, not that kind of. I mean, yung tips, ba, like for you, making yourself feel beautiful or
or just being beautiful, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have any secrets that you can share?
Vitamin C on my face.
Ah, vitamin C.
Yeah. Non-oily vitamin C, but liquid.
Okay.
Yeah. I buy this cream. It's called Neostrata. Hyaluronic acid. It's extremely good for the face.
Oh,
yeah. It closes the pores. Yes. Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yeah, yeah, you should actually.
Hyaluronic acid.
Yeah. Hyaluronic acid.
Hyaluronic, yeah.
Vitamin C. If you want to peel your skin a little bit, use vitamin A at night, and it gently peels it in about a week. You don't even realize that it's being
gentle,
peeled.
No.
Yeah, if you do it on a certain a percentage that's lower, don't use it strong because your skin has to get used to it. Yeah. And I use Sisley cream. It's really good.
What's this?
Sisley.
Sisley.
When my skin is really very dry, I use the Sisley cream. Yeah. So it's very simple regimen. I use ivory soap. I don't use any cleanser, just soap and water. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Soap
and then
water.
At night, I put my Retin A.
Oh.
Yeah. And then in the morning, I put my vitamin C and my hyaluronic acid. And when I feel that my skin is really dry at night, I put my Sisley cream as a moisturizer.
None of those expensive anti-aging creams.
No, I get allergy.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, because I think there's a little bit too much of I can't figure out what ingredient it is. Yeah.
How do you take care of yourself during the campaign? Like, you know, all that, I mean.
Sunscreen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what time do you sleep? Sleeping hours and that.
You know, I never sleep.
Huh?
I hardly sleep.
I mean,
only have like 4 to 5 hours sleep.
Is that okay?
It's okay for me. I think I've gotten used to it because the only free time for me to study is like 4:30 in the morning until 8. Yeah.
In the morning.
Until 8 a.m. and then it's time for school. You know, my system has been used to that for many years.
So you lived with 5 hours of sleep?
Yes.
I thought we needed 6 or 7.
8 actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, but I actually sleep at about 1 in the morning in the week, but sometimes 5:30. I mean, more often 5:30 than 6.
Oh,
yeah. Actually, it's really funny because this house has been blessed so many times. Because when I wake about 4:30 to study, wow, it's like I see like little shadows running around me, and I say, oh my gosh, what's going on here? You know, so many times I have holy water beside me and salt, and I sprinkle, and I say, you're not going to scare me, not at all.
So, what do you do to keep your mind sharp? Just keep reading?
I read. I read a lot. The mind really has to be sharp because my father had Alzheimer's and I'm so scared.
Okay.
You know that if I don't keep my mind busy, I don't want to be sick like that.
You want to learn something new? Then?
Every day I try to learn something new. Today I've learned something new, and you've taught me more about the importance of being a blogger.
I was just gonna ask that. Don't you wanna try tweeting or just even showing photos like Instagram?
Uh-huh.
Because those are interesting, like taking pictures.
Yeah, that's why you know. That's why when Lira said, you know, that I would meet you, but you're the second match of bloggers
yes.
that they meet. You know, then I was thinking, you know, this is how Obama won elections, right? And he got donations through an account, no?
Yeah, but we're still far off from that.
Yeah, but why not try to go that way? Because, you know, we were going to raise funds to free the 36 Sabah refugees that are now detained.
Uh-huh.
And I had the jail, because the jail makes my little souvenirs of Holy Sting Ting.
Mm-hmm.
The women in jail, because they have nothing to do. So, I'll show you a sample. Yeah, of my little Wally Sting thing.
But they make it
for 5,000. Yes, they make it for me. For 1,000 Wally Sting thing, they charge me 5,000 pesos because they have nothing to do. And we were going to sell that outside the churches, and you could imagine a Muslim selling the Wally Sting thing outside the Catholic church in the grounds. And you can contribute between 500 pesos to 1,000 or 5 pesos to 100 pesos. And this was going to help the refugees also, for them to be able to send their kids to school. So I'll show you the Walis Tingting. But I've been into this for the past 4 months. The women in the Quiapo jail make my Walis Tingting, my miniature ones that I give out during the campaigns. And then they, I send an officer to buy the components, and then we tie it like really tightly against them, the Walis Tingting, and then with a little round metal for the key holder.
Do you have any last questions before we wrap up?
That's why I was so strong about those women that stay in jail longer than what their term is for punishment.
Lakanatali. Anyway, siguro we can just close. Thank you, Ana, for
Thank you for the suggestions. Really, the suggestions, especially that entrepreneurship. Because if I did it, I would have to say what I have. But if somebody else had that idea, it certainly would take you a little bit long. You know, sometimes we help, but we help what we can. But you know, we also budget, you know, for what we have. And I'd like to take a look at that. Yeah. It's a very good suggestion.
Yeah. That's the advocacy of Sunny.
We are an employee generating nation. So if we could train the young people before they graduate, ang isipin nila dapat I could start my own business rather than I want to be employed in this company or that company.
Yes, because that really happens to us, right? Because even my nephews, you know, they're all employed, and I say, "Why don't we start this?" But then, you know, they also get discouraged there, and mainly they're scared of accounting, you know, and how they can get it back.
The risk. Yeah, taking the risk is one of the first things when you're an entrepreneur.
But that's the fun part of it.
I'll tell them. Oh, where's the Walis Tingting?
I'm looking for some.
There is in the hallway.
Ma'am, isang pahabo lang. Any other programs that you have in mind for women, specific for women?
Hindi pa ako nakastop.
You know, so many women look for livelihood. What I did in Masbate was I had to make my Walis Tingting. Yeah. Yeah. See? This is my Walis Tingting.
Sorry, what's your campaign slogan?
My campaign slogan? Una sa lahat, safe ka. So so you can be safe with the Walis Tingting, di ba? But then I had to attach safety together with the environment that has to cover even the mothers. So isn't this cute? You know what we do? We buy the whole Walis Tingting, and then you know sometimes the tips are kind of like scattered, di ba? So we just cut the tips here. Isn't it pretty?
It is.
Yeah. And the women in jail do this. No, I really love it. And then they put a bit of varnish. Yeah.
So that's 1,000. 5,000 for 1,000.
Yes. Oh. Yeah. And June Simon saw this, you know, the former mayor of Quezon City. And he says, that's so cute. And so he said, let's do it for the refugees. Yeah. Nice, no?
Yeah, I love
it. So cute. And they say, what yellow ribbon?
What's that material did you use?
This one?
Yeah, what's the material?
So what is Tingting itself? Yeah. And they say, why yellow? I said, well, when Ninoy came back from Boston, his favorite song was Tie a Yellow Ribbon.
That's true. It's stuck.
So it's stuck, diba? Right? Mm. And I'm sure that you know how we all fought. I mean, all of you are part of EDSA, you know?
Except so, probably Rosh. She's still young.
Yeah. Well, you're enjoying what us older people did for you. Oh, cute, no? Yeah. Go and get me a Walis Tingting. Any Walis Tingting that you see there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, what makes it cheaper in other places? We're already off the camera.
Okay. Wow. They tell me in Baguio that they have to import this from Quezon because there's no coconut trees in Baguio.
I was thinking that coconut trees. There's That's why no it's more expensive trees. In Baguio.
Too expensive. Yeah. Yeah. Here, Ion. Here. Peter, no?
thank you.
Yeah. It's so cute, no? And at the same time, it makes the women in jail feel better.
Yeah, that they're
busy. I'll tell you what else I did. Which women in jail now are putting together for me.
Huh? To tanong mo yung lighter question sa iyo, katanong sana kung ano yung favorite
food.
Ano yung mga niluto niya sa...
Oo nga, ako ang beauty talagang gusto ko. Yung beauty tips ba?
Kasi, ito si yung vlog about.
I vlog about those things.
I get them from the market like this. Sorry, we're not online anymore. I get them from the market like this, no? Like this. But generally, di ba, they have that...
No, I'll do a video.
That they have that rattan, di ba? So all of this we cut. Where's the other one? Yeah, it's cut already.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah. Is there in the room behind Roger, where everybody is?
Yeah.
Thanks, hon.